seconds. One time for the underdog. One time for the underdog. Ignition sequence start.
Let me see you put 'em up. Reach the sky, touch the stars up above. Cause it's one time for the underdog. One time for the underdog.
If you're into UFC, MMA, or any of the fighting stuff that's going on, you know this name, Chuck Liddell, the Iceman. Today we sat down and we broke down how this man, who is viewed as one of the killer knockouts of all time, actually got an accounting degree, a four-year accounting degree, and you'll see a side of him you've probably never heard before or seen before.
We are in somewhere outside of Hollywood where there's a lot of entertainers and actors who get paid to act like they're fighters, and then you have people that are real, legitimate fighters, that this right here is weapons of mass destruction that could hurt anybody if it hits your chin. And today we're hanging out with the man, Chuck, the Iceman Liddell. Brother, thank you for opening your house to us and spending this time with you.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, so now the one thing most people don't know about you is the fact that they see you as a fighter. You have the look. You look. By the way, I met you a few years ago at a Tony Robbins event. We sat right next to each other.
Oh.
I want to say 12 years ago, 11 years ago, some over a decade ago. But most people see you as a fighter. People probably don't have any idea that you have a business degree. And you got it right here from Cal Poly. So tell me about this whole business degree to being a fighter. I mean, how does these two don't go together?
When I went to college, I went to wrestle and play football. I wanted to get a PE degree, but my grandma didn't believe that was a real major. So I wasn't allowed to do that. So I had to pick a major when I was a freshman. I picked accounting because I was good at it. My mom used to do bookkeeping as an extra job.
So you were
job.
A numbers guy.
Yeah, yeah. My mom used to do bookkeeping as an extra job to make more money for the family. And I used to help her out when we were kids. So I got, you know, I'd help her with it. So I thought, oh, this is pretty easy. I can do accounting, no problem. So I did accounting, and then I'm glad I stuck with that. The business degree has helped. You know, everyone asks me if I do my own taxes, and I'm like, no. I had one tax. I had one. I had one tax class for 10 weeks. You know, it's like that doesn't make any sense. You know, but people don't realize when you get your accounting degree, then you get your job with the company, and then you go learn. They teach you how to do your do taxes and do the other things you need to learn.
But I think that's pretty impressive, knowing you got yourself a degree in accounting and you are knocking people out and, you know,
trust me, it was my, when I was given the opportunity, that's one of the reasons I stuck it out so long, is because it just seemed like this would be a lot more fun than getting a real job.
So accounting would be too boring for you? Today, Chuck Liddell is doing the, you know, bookkeeping for this company. Let's look at the highlights here.
I like to think, with my work ethic and the way I was raised, that I would have excelled at anything I did. I don't think, you know, I would have worked hard, and I think I would have done well doing that, but I just think this was a lot more fun.
So why don't we get into that? So let's go back to you being 12 years old, 13, 14. So Chuck, you got brothers. You come from a family where you guys, and I hear one of your brothers is a big guy, apparently 6'3", 300 pounds, or what do you know?
6'4",
you guys
are, yeah.
So were you guys, I have two boys. I have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. They're always fighting. Were you guys always, like, was there a competition thing going on in the family when you guys were kids?
No, not really. Like, I was always my mom always said, the number one son. I was in charge of taking care of the kids and making sure everyone was okay. My youngest brother, who's 5 years younger than me, he had open heart surgery when he was 8. And so he's always a baby. Like, even later on, and when we were working at the bars and stuff, someone would go after him. I mean, I'd go nuts. Like, it's like a, I was like, why are you protecting your brother so crazy? I'm like, he's still my baby brother.
Were you fighting all the time in school? Was there like a lot of fights in school? Was it just the wrestling side?
I fought a lot growing up. It was just funny. Like, I didn't really realize. I thought all of the fighters were like me growing up. Like, they fought a lot. They came up that way. But I've met a lot of great fighters in the UFC that, you know, been in one or two street fights in their whole life. Or been in, some of them have been in none. And I'm like, how'd that happen? I don't get it.
Where's the inspiration coming from?
Now, don't get me wrong. I hated bullies. I didn't like people to pick on people, but I like to fight. So I love testing myself. So I come up, guys giving somebody a hard time, and I walk up and go, hey, man, you don't want to fight, but I will. And when I was younger, when he said he didn't want to fight me, I'd kind of make him either put his tail between his legs and crawl out the door or fight me. You know, I kind of learned when I was like 21, 22, I was kind of trying to think, you know, I never start a fight, but I never let you out of it real easy either. So I kind of started learning to give people outs, you know.
At 21?
About 21, 22, I started getting, it just wasn't worth the headache.
So just to kind of get an idea, from 12 to 18, how many total fights you think you had?
I couldn't tell you.
More than 50?
Oh, for sure.
Oh, seriously?
For sure. I mean, we fought a lot. I've been fighting groups.
And this is non-gangs. You're just talking about
regular
fights.
I grew up in Santa Barbara, California.
Yeah, there's not going to be a lot of gangs over there.
No, I mean, we had some skinheads and stuff growing up at that time. When I was there, I'm like, what gang what? Like, we knew there was a couple gangs in town, but we were like, the football team was the gang, if anything. If it was the wrestling team, no one was afraid of anybody else.
Were you the bigger guy or no?
When I was 15 and a half years old, I was 5'9", 155.
15 and a half years old, 5'9", 155?
Yeah, and by the time I was 16 and a half, I was 6'2", about 180.
Got it.
So I wasn't real big, but I wasn't small. I was tough. I mean, I just liked to fight, man. It was entertaining. It was a competition to me.
Did you lose any fights in high school? Were there anybody you fought that you, like, somebody caught you? Or did you ever, like, do you? None. So you don't remember ever?
Nope. No.
That's interesting.
We've been in some crazy situations and, you know, crazy fights, brawls. I got kicked in the face once. Man, me and a bunch of buddies was getting jumped by about 20 guys. Got kicked in the face pretty good once, but, you know, I was still standing when they were gone, but I didn't look too good at that, but it was what it was.
Interesting. So did you, like, were you, because I know you wrestled, right? So were you planning on saying, listen, I have this energy, I have this fire, I kind of need to compete, I'm wanting to fight. Were you thinking you're going to go to boxing, right? Because back then there's no UFC or MMA.
Oh, no.
Were
you thinking honest, it was nothing like that. I mean, first off, I got started in wrestling because I was playing football, and my football coach, my sophomore year, football coach goes, "Oh, what are you doing in the winter?" Well, I go to baseball, preseason baseball, and oh no, you don't, you're wrestling. Okay, so you have to wrestle. We had to wrestle at least for the first part, and I got into it. I liked it, and I did really well, and so I continued wrestling. So I went on. The reason I chose Cal Poly was because I wanted to do both. I wanted to play football and wrestle at the same time. That was one of the few schools that I could go do that. And it was a Division II football school, which is, I had some recruiting stuff, but I wasn't probably gonna play Division I football.
It.
So I went to Cal Poly for that reason. This is how I got into fighting. You know, I did martial arts all the way through. I got my black belt in karate, and I was doing that when I was at college. I was in the Korean martial arts club. I was in the Aikido Jiu-Jitsu
club. You're 5th degree, by the way, right? 5th degree?
8th now, but yeah.
You're 8th degree now.
Yeah. And that's one of the styles, but yeah. And that's one of the things I try to explain to people about my history too, is like, I used to wrestle and I'd go to the wrestling practice and go to karate after, all week. I'd go to football, go to karate after. I never took off all year round. I never took off karate, no matter what I was doing. I mean, I missed Friday nights for football. That was caught the night anyway, so it was all right. I didn't miss any of the sparring. But, you know, I was always doing my martial arts. So anyway, I finished wrestling in college, and I was kind of not sure what I was going to do, besides I was just going to finish up school and figure out, get a real job, and go do something. And I met John Hackelman at an old karate school I used to train at.
What year is that?
This was 92, maybe.
Got it.
By 92, I went over to the school, and sparred with John Hackelman in a gi, and we did some wall sparring, and it wasn't full contact, but it was like kind of like karate sparring with them. And so I'm going through the thing, and he leaves, and they all take me off. It's, yeah, you kicked his ass, beat him up. You know, he did so good. I'm looking at him, what fight were you watching? I don't know what fight you guys were watching, but...
You felt it.
He was getting the better of me. I took him down a few times and did a couple of things, but other than that, he got the better of me on everything. And it was light contact too. And I'm like, and no one's ever done that to me. Since I was a kid, I used to go everywhere and beat up everybody. You know, whenever the sparring, you always win. So he gave me his card, and I put it in my pocket. And forgot about it. That next week, I was going out to Vegas to watch my buddy Alfie Alcaraz, who used to wrestle with me at Cal Poly, who'd started kickbox, and he was gonna go kickbox. So I'm going with him, I'm at his weigh-ins before the fight, and his trainer, who is the promoter, Nick Blomgren, One Kick, he comes over and goes, "Hey Chuck, Alfie says you're pretty tough. You wanna fight?
Right there.
Yeah, I'm up. Sure, why not? What do I got to do? And he goes, oh, you just got to come way in over here and we're going to have you fight. So, it would be the next night. So this is the weigh-ins. Guy for his main event didn't show up for the weigh-ins. So he had a guy that was 15-0. He was going to have me fight the guy that was 15-0. The commissioner goes, okay. So I'm weighing in with this guy and the commissioner goes, so what's your record? And I go, I haven't fought yet.
Oh, no.
And they're like, they looked away from me and looked at Nick. I'm, no, that's not going to happen. And so Nick goes, hey, man, they're not going to let it go. But if you want to fight, come back. I'll put you on my next card. Go train, go home and train and come back and I'll have you fight. I got that card in my pocket. I'm like, hey, this guy, it said kickboxing world champion.
How old are you at that time?
What am I, 22?
Okay, got it.
23 maybe.
Got it.
And I'm like, oh, I said kickboxing world champion on there. I'm like, okay, let's go see this guy. So I call him up and John invites me to his house to train. So we get up to his gym up on the hill and he has a guy with him, Jesus Sanchez, a local karate guy, coming on the watch. And we put on boxing gloves. He said, we'll just do some boxing sparring. Now, remember, I've never done just hands in my whole life. Like, since I started karate, I've been fighting with hands and feet. I've never done just hands. I've never just boxed.
This is purely hands.
It's purely just boxing. We start sparring, and John hits hard. If anybody that knows him, he used to fight out of the Jet Center, and he had a great left hook was his license plate. Great left hook. So he handed me a beating for 19 straight minutes. Jesus Sanchez finally said, hey man, can we stop? Hey guys, come on, can we just train? Stop. And I was like, man, that guy just handed me a beating. I mean, he handed me a beating. I didn't go down, but I mean, he gave me a beating.
Was that the worst at that time? Like in your lifetime, you've never had a beating?
No one's ever gotten anywhere near beating me like that before or since. But
like that?
Yeah. But he's like, hey, so you're gonna come back and train tomorrow, right? So yeah, I'll be back. I was there 6 days a week for the next 7 years or so before we moved to open the gym. Did something else.
Six days a week for 7 years.
Yeah. Started training, started fighting. Wow. He started helping me. That got me started kickboxing. And that's what kept me from, as I graduated and finished my degree, that kind of kept me like still trying to fight. I'd always wanted to do martial arts anyway. Like when I was a kid, like in school, I'd be like making gyms. I'd be doodling gyms while I'm bored in class. I always wanted to teach martial arts. I would have been doing martial arts and teaching martial arts on the side.
Did you have
anyway.
An inspiration? Was there somebody that you looked up to? Like, was there?
Not really. I started watching Kung Fu Theater when I was a kid. And they had these demonstrations in between, like the showings. And I thought it was the coolest thing in the world, some of the stuff these guys are doing. Now, find out, you know, it's more like the showing stuff. But it was cool. Cool enough to get me interested. A lot of people, I started learning karate. I went to an old school style where they trained old school ways, which is actually really good for my ADD. was perfect because it actually trained me to control myself and be able to do, because it's trying to, you know, if you sit there in one place and do this 500 times in a row.
Doesn't fit your personality.
Was tough, but I wanted it so bad.
Got it.
That I did it, and it trained me to be able to do that with other things, like be able to concentrate on a test and be able to focus when I need to. So I got very good at focusing when I needed to, and I think a lot of it's from that style of teaching. But the one thing that I look back on, I look at it is everyone was always looking for that magic. They were going to go to this karate school and give them this magic move, and they're going to all of a sudden be the baddest guy on the planet. Mm-hmm. Most people figure out in the first 3 to 6 months that's not it. It's a lot of hard work, and it's a lot of training. It's a lot of learning. And most people quit at that point because they realize there's no real magic to this. I'm not gonna all of a sudden, turn into a wizard and be able to beat everybody up.
That's right.
But for me, that was like, oh, well, that means I gotta work harder then. I gotta learn, I gotta be better at this. I wanna learn more.
So you got the disciplines early. So now let's fast forward past that. So when did you meet Dana White? When did that connection happen?
Okay, Dana was actually managing, I think, Tito. And a guy by the name
He's managing Tito.
Yeah, and Wayne Harriman, who's friends with Tito and Dana, was a friend of mine, and would see me train with Tito. And he actually told Dana, hey Dana, you might want to sign this guy. He might be better than Tito. So Dana signed me then. He was my manager. So he was managing me and Tito.
Simultaneously.
Yeah, and maybe some other people. And at that time, me and Tito used to train together a little bit. Now, Tito made it out to be for a long time that, like, if you listen to him, it sounded like he took me off the street, taught me how to fight, and I turned on him. From day one, the times that I came to work with him, I came down to help him out. He was training for a fight, I'd come down and be a sparring partner. You know, he's, oh, Chuck slept on my couch, and then I'm like, yeah, because you're too cheap to get me a hotel room. I slept on your couch because I'm a nice guy. I was coming down to help you out. You weren't helping me out.
When you guys were fighting, even at that time, could you hang with him at that time?
He'd never been able to hang with me. That's why he didn't.
So he could never hang with you,
He couldn't strike with me at all. Takedowns, total times we've ever trained together, it's 2-16. He took me down twice, I took him down 16. One of those, I was off the mat and he had my foot and he counted it when I was like the end of the round. The other one, I'd gone out the night before in Vegas and he was training for a fight. So I was a little tired. I took him down 8 times. I gave him the last one, like, okay, whatever. I'm tired. I'm done. Well, who's counting? But he can't take me down. And then when he can start on top of me, he can't stay on top. Now, technically, he's probably better at submitting people than I am. But other than that, there's nothing. I mean, he can't out-position me. He can't out-strike me. He can't out-wrestle me. And he knew this. He knew that. That's why he never wanted to fight me.
Were you guys ever good friends? Were you guys best friends?
No. I would challenge him to tell me one time he called me to do something outside of business, not to come down. I called me out, I think, once for a charity thing he was doing at his gym, and every other time was to be a sparring partner, to help him out. Other than that, I liked some of his friends, and I didn't dislike him either at the time, but I didn't know him that well.
How much of it, let me ask you this, so as a fan, right, I'm looking from the outside, how much of it is promotional, how much of it was?
None of it's promotional.
That's, for me, that's what I'd like to believe.
That's not me. I've never been that guy. Maybe I should have been. The promotional part of it from his end was, we're friends, so I don't have to fight him. That's why I don't have to fight him. I'm not dodging him. I didn't want to fight my friend.
Which leads me to what he just said 3 days ago. And I'm sure you saw it. He said it on TMZ.
I didn't see it. TMZ told me and I responded to it.
So you haven't seen it yet on what he says?
I don't really pay attention to him. He said some stupid stuff over there.
Yeah, he said if you want to fight him because of money or whatever, I'll do the favor for him because he did a favor for me in the past. And you know what's amazing? Here's what's amazing. This is the most amazing thing. Paul knows you guys fought, but Paul doesn't know when you guys professionally fought twice, who won how many times. So he doesn't know. So after Paul watches what Ortiz said, Paul gets the impression that he's beaten you. And then Paul goes, does research, but I'm setting up the punch that he's gonna give you. It's gonna be a little extra juice in it. And then Paul says, holy shit, Chuck's kicked his ass, but Tito's speaking as if he's beaten up his entire life. So a part of him being more promotional maybe makes the audience think that he's got an edge over you. So what do you think about his position and your position?
I love it. Hey man, sell it, bro. Sell the fight, I'm in. I mean, I was on the fence about coming back and doing a comeback fight anyway, but if he'll actually fight me and show, if someone can promise me, give me some guaranteed money, he's gonna show up, I want something in it that says if he doesn't show up, he owes me money.
Well, he's saying he wants to fight you.
I know, but if he doesn't show up, I know, he says a lot of things. If he doesn't show up, he's gonna pay me something.
Well, fair enough. Maybe if he watches this, that's a direct call. So here's the other part. Dana White said in an interview, they asked him, they said, so Dana, do you have any favorites? I don't know if you heard what Dana said. They asked him, say, Dana, do you have any favorites? He says, hell yeah, I have favorites. He says, who are your favorites? So Dana says, look, the first time Chuck and him fought, he says, I told him, I said, Chuck, I want you to beat his ass. And when you do, I need the gloves and I need the trunks because I'm going to frame it. He says, when you come into my house today, those gloves and the trunks are in front of his house when you walk in. He says, because he wanted you to win so bad for whatever reason he had that. And it's amazing, now you're seeing the representation, he represented you and him. So when you two fight, and I'm watching as a fan, you really want to beat this guy up and win. You're not just going in to do business. There's a little bit of additional juice to want to beat Tito up.
Well, for me, let me break that down for you, the way I fight. That kind of stuff doesn't really affect the way I fight, okay? It affects the way I train.
Got it.
I don't have to get up to train for him. I will never let him have an inch to keep running his mouth. He runs his mouth after I've knocked him out twice. I'd hate to see what happened if he beat me. I'd never hear the end of it. So there's no chance I'm going to go in there.
That makes sense.
There's no chance I'm gonna not going to go in there 100% prepared for him.
By the way, you look like you're training. You look look very good, by the way. You look like you're ready to fight next week if there was something.
I'm getting there.
Okay.
But for some reason, he's thinking, Chuck's been out of the game for a while. I think he's probably slipping. That's the only reason he's thinking he's going to do it. He thinks he's got a shot at it. Or he really needs the money.
If it isn't him, who would you want to fight if it's not him?
Chael's been talking a lot of trash, and I wouldn't mind fighting Chael because I think he thinks it's funny. I keep saying that, but I think it's more of a warm-up fight for me because he doesn't hit real hard. He's not going to out-wrestle me. He's not going to ground and pound me. And he's got a big mouth. He sells fights. Hey, more power to you, you know?
So you are making a comeback to say if the right fight comes up, you're making a comeback. You're ready.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
I haven't talked to Dana about it yet. I haven't talked to anybody. It just depends. I mean, someone's got to make a real offer, you know, and it makes sense, you know, but I'm not against it. But I'm motivated enough right now because he's running his mouth and it sounds like he's serious about coming out of retirement to fight me. That I'm going to get in shape because worst case scenario, I'm in shape. It's okay. I don't mind being in shape. So for other business things, like for me, staying in shape is one of those things. If I want to continue to make money in the field, anything that I do, part of what my persona or my character or whatever you want to say is being in shape.
That's right.
And fitness things are where I can make money. Although the nice thing about me is I was never a character. It made it real easy. I was just me.
So let's talk about the promotional side. So you've been in it. You've now 20 years. You've seen 2 decades, right? That this has been going on with the UFC. Who would you say are the biggest shit talkers that UFC has ever had?
To be honest, Conor, like you want to talk about backing up and not backing up. Okay. Conor, and I've gotten a lot of shit for saying this by from his fans. Like, I don't like that kind of shit talk. I don't like that kind of thing. That's not my style.
A gust of wind and he does the chicken dance. You know what I mean?
As you can tell by looking at this fine physique, that I'm a freak of nature. You know what I mean? I'm a specimen of human movement. So who the fuck?
I look at him as a novice. He throws an overhand right. He looks at the floor, closes his eyes and hopes for the best. This is day one beginner stuff where I come from.
You're making bets with the $500,000 I gave you?
Notice.
48,000 you went from. You went from 48,000 to $500,000. Thank me and be grateful. Be grateful. I butchered your face.
No, put that at the quote. Chuck doesn't like the way he talks. But I go, you obviously didn't read the article. I also said he's one of my 5 top favorite guys to watch fight right now. As I've also said, a lot of great things about it. That was the only thing I said, I don't like the way he talks shit. But I get it. He's trying to get in your head. He has purpose to his shit talking, which I love. I actually love that mind warfare. Because when I'd say stuff, anything I say that was a little bit shit talking at all and things was me trying to get in someone else's, the other guy's head.
You know, you might see some groundwork, but that's it. Like I always fight, if it comes, it comes. But I'm planning on standing up with him and knocking him out.
Hopefully, like if I'm fighting Tito, I'd give him shit about it. If he's a man, he'll stand up with me. Because I want him to think about maybe I have to stand up with him to show that I can fight. So he's not trying to take me down the whole time. Conor does a masterful job of it. I think that's how that's one of the reasons he beat Aldo.
Here we go!
Green trunks for the southpaw, the notorious Conor McGregor. Black trunks for the champion, Jose Aldo Jr.
Conor relaxed, smiling.
I watch Aldo fight all the time. I've never seen him run across the ring and try to attack somebody. He's a old kind of Muay Thai type guy. He tries to feel you out for a round or so and then figures out your timing and then goes after you. You know, so I think he was so mad he ran across the ring and got
caught. Eight seconds, whatever the time was.
But Conor's one of those shit talkers that he delivers. He fights the way he talks. Like he fights with reckless abandon.
Would you say Tito delivers or no?
Tito did a really good job of delivering when he was fighting guys that delivering in impressive fashion when he was fighting guys that were lower than him, that weren't quite his level. But then, like, I remember watching a thing on the Best Damn Sports Show, I think it was, with him and Randy Couture. And Randy's a good shit talker, like a counter puncher with a shit talking. I mean, he was making Tito look stupid. And he got off.
So
off
you
track
put him, you put him as one of the best, Couture.
He's good at countering. Like he's a great, but he's like a lot of wrestlers are. A lot of guys have a good. Like I do that same thing. Like I'm kind of like more of a counter punch guy. Like if you say something, I'll keep taking it for a little bit, and then I'll say something that trumps whatever you were saying. Ronda Rousey did a great job. I mean, she was promoting. See, and those people, like Chael Sonnen does a great job of promoting. Because I think it's WWE, and I think it's stupid the way he does stuff. But I know fans that just love it. Mm. Not the hardcore fans, the other fans, the guys that occasionally watch, that they touch. And that's what makes those guys so much bigger.
You're pulling an audience that you don't already have.
They pull in people that don't always watch the
fights. Got it. Very cool. So let me ask you this. Your favorite fighters. I know you've said good things about the Diaz brothers. Who do you enjoy watching fight?
You know, I like watching guys that get after it and try to finish fights. To be honest, I just like guys that fight, like show up to fight. Like this isn't a game. They're not trying to win by points. They're not trying to protect their career.
You're getting a little bit of that recently where guys are trying to win with points and they don't call them out.
And don't get me wrong, I understand from a coaching standpoint. I remember telling one of my guys that he was fighting and he took this guy down five times and went for a submission right away and got rolled over all five times. So he was losing the fight because he's in a bad position. Even though he got the takedown, he only got reversed because he went for a submission, but regular refs, regular judges don't understand that. I'm like, look, you have to, when you take them down, you got to hold them for a few minutes, hit them a couple of times, hold them for a little bit, hit them a couple of times, then go for your submission. Don't jump right away. Mm. You know, which is not the way I really want, as a fan, would want to watch. I like the way he fought as a fan.
So you're giving technical advice as a coach, but as a fan, you don't want to see them fight the way you give the technical advice.
Right.
How interesting is that?
People ask me the question, I ask, well, this is a coach, manager.
Good point. As a coach, we have seen
as
it.
A coach, manager, I don't want you to lose a fight because that costs you money. Now, don't get me wrong, being an exciting fighter helps too. It's going to get you a lot more money if you're winning.
No doubt about it. I'm assuming you were Fedor, like you would enjoy watching Fedor fight.
Oh, I love watching Fedor fight. Yeah, he can end a fight at any time. Dan Henderson, I love watching him fight. That guy's he's a beast. And you know, he's never out. He's never out of the fight. You know, he can win. You can beat him up for four rounds and four minutes and 45 seconds in a fifth round. If he catches one of those bombs, it's good night.
Why don't we talk about that? So when you're in it, like the thing I'm curious about is how much of this, like you're in it, it's heated. You're just going bam, bam. You're throwing the punches at him. You're throwing the knees and you're getting hit. Let's say someone's on you and they're hitting you. Do you actually know what's going on there? Or is it purely reflexive? Like, are you able to, in that split second, can you process
things?
You
know what you're doing. You know what's going on, you're processing.
How much is processing, how much is reflexive?
Usually like when you get an exchange, the fast exchange. Like if we get in, boom, we get something and we start fast exchange, yep. It's reaction. Your reaction,
got it.
You're acting fast. With someone on top pounding on you and you're down, that's thinking. You can see it coming. It's taking. That's not a quick pop, 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 pop. Like an exchange, I mean, like someone throws something, you counter, and then you counter, pop, 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 and then you start thinking again. I mean, it's really quick. Those little quick reaction moves.
And in that moment,
like when I fought Vitor Belfort, he finally came after me in the third round because they're telling me he had to win the round. He came at me. And we went boom, 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 boom. I sat him on his ass with a right hand. Mm-hmm. That was just a counter. I was reacting to him coming straight at me. It's a step up, pop, 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 bang. That was just something that went through and did.
You have one of the best knockouts of all time. You, if you want to watch a highlights, knockout highlights, just type in Chuck Liddell, knockout highlights. It's nonstop. You can watch them and they're incredible. But the thing I want to know about, like in the business world, sometimes in the business world, you get hit, okay? And in that moment, You can't teach a dog fight to somebody. If you got the fight, you got the fight. Sometimes you see in your world, somebody gets hit and they back down and back up and they don't come back to fight. Is that instinct? Is that fear? Is that not lack of dog fight? Do you see that as a coach or something?
Well, I see it all the time. I say this all the time with striking. Like, I'll say, that guy doesn't like to get hit. Everyone goes, what do you mean, no one likes to get hit? Yeah, yeah, no one, but what I mean by that is he's unnecessarily afraid of getting hit. He's pulling his head out like this. He's not reacting the way he should.
Can that be changed? From your years of watching a bunch of fighters, can that actually be changed for somebody?
I never tried to change that. I mean, it's a funny question because I used to always think mental toughness, you either have it or you don't. But I did a lot of studying on teaching it. And, you know, I think part of it was for me, when he came to me, by the time he came to me, if you weren't mentally tough, I didn't want it. It's too late. I don't want it. I'm not going to waste my time trying to teach you how to be tough.
So I guess the question would be more this way. Go back to when you were in high school, where a guy was maybe at your level, or college, where you were competing, and you said, this guy's actually, he's pretty solid when I fight this guy. But his mental and emotional toughness was a little bit less than yours. Did you see somebody like that and said, that guy never made it past a certain level, and you kept continuing to grow?
Oh, for sure. When you put under that pressure, you have two choices, really. You break and fold, or you come out fighting. If you're gonna succeed in I think about anything, you need to be that guy that comes out fighting. Tito tapped his strikes one time. Funny story. So we were at a party talking about it, and I forgot that he had tapped his strikes when we fought Frank Shamrock. We were talking about this other guy that tapped to Wanderlei Silva, and I was like, to strikes, he was getting struck and he tapped. I'm like, man, I'm like, what a pussy. Man, can you believe that guy's tapped his strikes? If you can think to tap, you can think to defend yourself and try to get out of it, can't you? And I go, I didn't realize, I was talking to Tito, and Tito was like that, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. We kind of walked out, and I'm like, oh shit, he tapped his strikes.
And in that moment, you didn't know, you didn't think about it.
I didn't think, I forgot that he had tapped his strikes in that fight, because, you know, when they stopped that fight, I went nuts, because that was right when I first started training him, was helping him train, get ready for fight, was before he fought Frank Shamrock. And I was on the side, and I didn't see him tap. I went nuts that they stopped the fight. I'm like, no, it's almost over. He already won. He was won all the. Mm-hmm. He won the rounds up to then, and that round was almost over. And I'm like, oh no, you can't stop the fight. Why are you stopping? He's not hurt. And then someone told me he tapped. I'm like, oh, what, he tapped. How?
Have you ever tapped?
No.
No.
No. Here's the thing. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not telling people not to tap.
But the point I'm making with you is you've been hit. I mean, you will not stop with the fight till the very end.
Oh, no. I went to sleep. The guy trying to choke me. I went to sleep. I don't tap. No, here's the thing, though. Don't get me wrong. Now, tapping's okay. It's not. If you get in a position where your arm's going to get broken, your knee's going to get broken.
It's a different story.
Smarter side of valor. Live to fight another day. You blow out your knee, it might never be the same. You blow out your elbow, it might never be the same. So that's something to tap to. The thing is, the chokes, like when a guy taps to a choke, if I can think to tap, I can think to try to get out of it. I still got a little bit of air left. I can get out of it. I've rolled out of headlocks in high school wrestling, when a guy rolled out the wrong way, got out, stood up like this, with stars in my eyes, could barely see, but they didn't know. They had no idea, but I'd rolled out and I almost choked myself out, but I got out.
Wow.
For me, it's never been a question whether or not I'm gonna quit. I have my saying about mental toughness. I always said mental toughness is an everyday thing. You can't just turn it on and off for a fight, for a match, for whatever.
It's life.
It's life, you have to do it all the time. And as I read studies on it, actually, afterwards, training people to do it, a lot of teaching them routines, helps. Anything where you have to do it all the time, and when you don't feel like doing it, you get up and do it, because that's your routine.
Where it almost doesn't make you think, it's continuous?
Yeah, and the point I'm getting to is, I've been retired for about three years, and I've been kind of letting things go, and hey man, I don't have to do that now. I put in my time, I did my thing, I became world champion, did everything I want to do. I can relax. I don't have to do this. I don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like doing that today. That kind of stuff. I started doing that. And then we're in Hawaii, my family and my oldest son starts running up the mountain. We're going up on the stairs. He starts running up and I start running up behind him because I can't let him beat his dad. So I'm running up and I pass him. And I realize I'm in not very good shape. But I pass him. And he's gonna stop, but I'm like, man, I started running this thing, I gotta finish it. And I started in my mind for the first time in my life that I could remember, I actually questioned whether or not I should. And to me, that was enough. Just the fact that the question even came into my mind, whether or not I should stop or keep going, bothered me and made me start working on changing back my decisions in my normal everyday life, because it was bleeding into my competitive life, even if it's just that kind of competition. Was the fact that, because I've never even, the question never, for me, the question would have never came up. If I started running that, I'm going to finish it.
You think success caused that a little bit?
I don't think it was success. I think it was retirement. It was actually just because for me.
You reached the top of the mountain type of feeling?
Well, and being like, I felt like when I retired, I was done. I didn't have,
got
I
it.
Lost that, even being at the top of the mountain, I still was trying to prove I'm the best in the world
got
all
it.
The time. So there's still that goal was always right there. It's always been there. And all of a sudden, I move off from here, there's no goal. There was no final place.
Was a retirement psychologically messing with you? Like, what am I gonna do today when I wake up? Like, was there part of that screwed with your head a little bit or no?
I don't know that it screwed with my, I don't know.
It
is a really weird thing to do. Like, you've been getting ready for the next thing since I was, 12 years old, 10 years old. I've been doing...
That's what I'm saying,
I've been getting ready for a football game, a wrestling match,
something. And all of a sudden,
and then, and now I don't have to get ready for anything. I don't have to do anything. Because I used to say, oh, I take all this time off, Taking time off for me used to be still going to gym 5 days a week and working out with the team, Still going to lift in four days a week. It was still quite a bit of working out. Mm-hmm. And I used to call that taking time off.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm out of shape because I had been taking time off. Well, no, I just wasn't in peak shape, but I was still in shape. But now it was like, now I don't have to do anything. And, then you start prioritizing other things. Like, I got to do this for kids, I can do that. It takes precedence.
Yeah, and the only reason I ask that is because you hear a lot of times guys that say, I was with Gianluca Vacchi a couple weeks ago. Gianluca Vacchi is, they call him the most interesting man in the world. Guy's got like 12 million followers on Instagram. He runs a $3 billion company, $400 million guy. And he said, I ran so hard from 25 to 35 that I stopped. And he says, when I stopped, it was kind of like, what am I gonna be doing? He was having, health issues and all these other things. So sometimes you hear stories, I'm gonna be a millionaire, the moment I become worth $10 million, I'm gonna retire. And then when they do retire, it's like a feeling of emptiness. Sometimes you get super competitive people that get, if they don't have something they're gonna be doing next. And that kind of leads me into the next thing. So, you see in basketball, Chuck retires, he becomes an announcer. Shaq retires, he's an announcer. This other guy retires. You either become a coach or a trainer or all this. That's what you do. In your world, when someone retires, what do you do next?
Well, you can become an announcer. That's possible. That option's there for me. Being a coach, for me, the reason that's not an option for me is that I have a family and I don't, and it's very time intensive. But I've started doing, other things, and I found that I needed to start finding something I'm passionate about. I started acting. I'm trying to learn how to act better and do better in movies. And
you've been in quite a few things.
We were here first, asshole.
Yo, move the car.
Easy, drama. That's Chuck Liddell.
What's a Chuck Liddell?
Guy's the ultimate fighting champ. They call him the Iceman. He KO'd Randy Couture twice last year. I'm giving him the spot out of respect.
Don't be a schmuck, Turtle. Liddell's the gut.
You think?
Yeah, no doubt. Check out the hidden camera van parked conveniently right next to the empty spot.
I don't see any cameras, Drama.
They're in there, Turtle. Trust me, they're in there.
Look, buddy, I was here first.
I don't think so. That spot's ours. So why don't you and your hoopty just move along?
My what?
Your hoopty, your beater, your hunk of junk. Move along.
You should watch who you're talking to like that, my friend.
I ain't your friend, tough guy. Yeah, that's right. I know who you are, you WWF wannabe. So you gonna move your car? What do I gotta get in there moving for you?
Daddy?
Doing a few things. I got a bigger role coming up soon.
Anything you can talk about or not yet?
Not yet. Not until we
you
get
can't
signed.
Promote
not
it yet.
Not until I get it signed. Yeah,
okay, we'll make got sure it. Makes sense.
But we've got a few things coming up that should be coming out soon.
So you're keeping yourself busy?
I'm keeping busy.
Is that everybody? Is it a lot of your peers as well? Like, you know, because remember back in the days when the biggest controversy was, hey, UFC fighters don't make any money. And there was this whole, everybody would question Dana, no one's making money. And then a little bit, what is the career, maybe not for a guy at your level, what is the career for the other guys that are fighting? Is it just purely going into that coaching route? Or is the money now here where cats can actually start making some money, sponsorships, all this other stuff?
I've been out of the market for long enough where I'm not sure where they're at right now. I mean, I know some of the guys, they're getting paid better. I mean, I still think you have to, there's not a lot of guys making enough money to retire on for the rest of their life. They have to build something to go to from there. But most guys, I think that are, I always look at the coaching route, it's always a good one. I mean, I would have been okay with that if that was my, if that's what I ended up doing. Because that's what I wanted to do since I was a kid, was to teach karate. Like, I want to do, if I do it, I'll probably do more of a karate school than a team, fight team. We're still planning on it. I'm going to open one. But we're going to have it, it's more of going to be more of a karate school. It might have a fight team, as long as they understand I'm not their coach. I will help them as much as they're here, but I don't want to be their coach. And the hard thing with that is they become family. You know, you've got guys, if I'm coaching, I had a fight team when I was fighting, and you got 15, 20 guys fighting, and they become family. You know, and so if I feel like me being there when they're fighting would help them give them a better chance of winning, I feel like I have to be there. So, you know, and with now there being 40 UFCs a year, you know,
more opportunity.
I would be gone, if I had 20 guys, I'll be gone 40 weeks a year, you know, at least.
You got the family,
you
got the kids.
That's without Bellator. That's without a bunch of other organizations that are out there that are great right now.
So you are saying there's more money to be made today than what it was 10, 15 years ago with the game?
Oh, for sure.
Night and day, it is today. So Dana White, he seems like a very interesting guy. What would you say are some of Dana's strengths?
Passion. He wanted this sport to succeed. I think what him and Lorenzo did really well is their decisions were made on not trying to make as much money as they can this fight. It was, how can we grow the brand? How can we grow the sport?
Yep.
How big can we make the sport? And obviously they cashed out on that one pretty good.
Yes, they did. $4 billion or whatever the number was.
As mad as anyone wants to get at him and all that stuff with it is, you got to remember, hey man, if they didn't come around and sink, you know, Frank and Lorenzo and Dana hadn't come around and those guys hadn't sunk $46 million into trying to make a sport work, we'd never be here.
Was there ever a time where you guys were almost out of business?
They actually, I think the Ultimate Fighter was kind of the way I understood it. Everyone tries to think I have insight on this. No one ever said it, but I heard from other people that they were thinking about if that one didn't work, if that didn't do it, they're going to wrap it up. They were going to, you know, look at moving out after that. And obviously it was a home run.
And it's that big of an enterprise now.
Oh, but and it couldn't have been better. They paid it out of pocket, so they owned it. You know,
which means you get a bigger rip.
Yeah, which means they've got this franchise that they can move around, they can do whatever they want with.
Well, Dana's equity alone is getting them $360 million, somewhere, you know, around that number. No, it's a solid number.
Oh.
So last question for you. You saw the Conor Mayweather fight. So let's talk about boxers in the UFC world, UFC boxing world.
I've been hearing this for a while. The Mayweather, they're talking about him fighting in the UFC. I don't know what guy they're going to bring over to give him even to have a shot at making it out of the first round. It's going to be someone that doesn't belong in the UFC if they want to give Mayweather a chance. And then someone said that they're talking about Conor fighting him in the UFC, which is, again, it'll be embarrassing. For me, what would be fun was to see them kickbox. Have Conor and Mayweather kickbox. Because I just want to watch Mayweather get hit with two leg kicks and be laying in the corner crying for his mommy. I mean,
how long would it take? 10 seconds, it's done.
Look, he's got, it's like in MMA, he's got one punch and he's not a heavy puncher. He's not known for his heavy hands. He's got one punch to knock the guy out and then it's over. As soon as the guy grabs a hold of him, it is over. Kickboxing, I mean, he's got one round maybe to knock the guy out. Because he won't be able to stand after. If I fought a boxer, in a boxing stance, stands in a boxing stance, he's not gonna, even if he was taught to leg check, he's gonna leg check my shin once. Then he's gonna stop leg checking it, and then he's not gonna be able to walk. The leg kicks alone will
annihilate,
will end it for, annihilate yeah. him. They don't know how to defend him, they're not used to getting hit by him. I mean, I had a cut on my shin, and they took an x-ray. And the doctor came out and had to show my wife how crazy the x-ray was, because I had an extra layer of bone all the way down my shin. She's like, man, what kind of trauma have you had to your shin? But I have an extra layer of bone all the way down. But that's the difference. You know, if I kick someone that doesn't, he hasn't trained and hasn't kicked very hard, it's not gonna hurt me, and it's gonna hurt them a lot.
Wow. An extra layer of bone you're gonna get hit by. But brother, thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed it. Thanks everybody for listening. And by the way, if you haven't already subscribed to Valuetainment on iTunes, please do so. Give us a 5-star, write a review if you haven't already. And if you have any questions for me that you may have, you can always find me on Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube. Just search my name, Patrick Bit-David. And I actually do respond back when you snap me or send me a message on Instagram. With that being said, have a great day today. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.